Qua sopra.
Ai.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
All right, and hello everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast, episode 184 of the show. Hope everyone is well. I'm your co-host, Alexander Gange-Ruzic, joined as always by Samuel Rowan. And yeah, we got quite a lot to dive into. The Vancouver Whitecaps opened their MLS Cup playoff journey game one in LA against LAFC. They now return home for game two. Of course, I say game one, game two, not leg one, leg two. It's best of three. The strangest format in the world is certainly manifested itself in the first round across MLS, as some will know. I'm sure teams like Sporting Kansas City and LAFC would have loved for it to be leg one and leg two. But alas, it is game one, game two, game three, a fresh slate from the Vancouver Whitecaps, who could certainly use it. And then over in the CPL, was the CPL final this weekend. Forge FC continues their dominance in the playoffs with another playoff win over Calgary, another final win, another playoff trophy. So yeah, it was a very eventful weekend. I mean, some women's national team games over the last few days as well. A shout out to Halifax and Montreal for their sellouts as the Christine Sinclair farewell continues. But yeah, I guess Sam, I mean, no shortage of stuff to tuck into this weekend.
Oh, absolutely. It was a busy one. As we were just talking about right before the show, sort of a shame that the Whitecaps was happening at the, you know, similar time to the CPL final. You got the women's match going on as well. It was hectic, and lots of interesting storylines to dive into. Yes, the Whitecaps, they drop their opening playoff matchup, but because of the format, losing by a 3-goal margin really doesn't mean all that much. It's strange the way you're sort of trained to think of these playoff matchups in MLS soccer up until this point. So, you know, Vanni Sartini earlier today called it the Joker match, essentially, right? Where they're just trying to go and see if they can get some bonus points, essentially. And the Whitecaps kind of threw it all at LAFC, especially in the first half. They went for it and ultimately couldn't sustain, you know, losing the match 5-2 in the end. But I think lots of little tactical wrinkles, player performance wrinkles we can dive into, some things to watch out for. As the Whitecaps get set to host LAFC this upcoming Sunday, not a Saturday at 7:30, but a Sunday in the afternoon. Something we can talk about too is the start times. The Whitecaps maybe campaigning, showing off to MLS and Apple TV their desire there for some variety. So yeah, very much looking forward to getting into it, looking back on the match that was, previewing the Whitecaps this weekend at home, and then some CPL chat on the back end as well, because obviously the hardware has been handed out and a very familiar team hoisting that hardware. So as always, Alex, very much looking forward to diving in.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, let's dive into it. The Whitecaps LAFC. Look, I mean, this is, to be honest, not that surprising, I guess, in a sense. Ultimately, the result, 5-2, I think, was a bit surprising. The Whitecaps have played LA rather well. The Whitecaps have also avoided any sort of blowouts like that on the road in a while. Like, they've always been at least competitive. But one thing that's fascinating about the playoffs is that trends really seem to come into play, and home field advantage does seem to work out. I find it fascinating. So far, we've seen 7 of the 8 matchups in the first round, plus, of course, the 2 wild cards. Home teams have won, I think, all but one of the games. And that was, of course, SKC heading to St. Louis. And at least in St. Louis's case, there's the XG thing where St. Louis's expected goal difference was like, what, like 17 before above their, like, you know, there was that huge discrepancy there. This one annoying thing for the Whitecaps, they have one of the best expected goal differences in the West. There's only 2 teams who had better. It was LAFC and it was Seattle. So it's kind of hilarious that the Whitecaps pretty much on that last day, it was a seesaw between if they're going to play Seattle, if they're going to play LAFC, because those are pretty much the two worst choices to play, in my opinion. Again, I know some people said Houston. I would have taken Houston if I were Vancouver. I would have taken some of the other options. I definitely would have taken St. Louis. But in the end, it was LAFC. And I mean, LAFC, they showed why they're the defending MLS Cup champions. They showed why they have such great underlying numbers. It was just a solid performance from them. It really felt like they were always in control. Yes, the Whitecaps had some good responses in the first half. Of course, in this game, LAFC goes up 1-0. Whitecaps tie it at 1-1. You're like, okay, impressive comeback or response. Sorry. LAFC makes it 2-1. The Whitecaps respond again. But after that point, you kind of knew that the Whitecaps either had to hold on the rest of the way or score another, because it felt like if LAFC was going to get a third lead, they weren't going to relinquish it. And sure enough, that ended up kind of being the story of the match. But that's why LAFC is the team that they are, and why this is, this is always going to be a tough battle. Of course, now the Whitecaps head home where they'll fancy their chances. But man, LAFC showed why they're the team they are right now.
Absolutely. I think no better example than on the second LAFC goal, Buonga's first, the one that the Whitecaps did concede from open play, where, you have Richie Larea, Javane Brown kind of getting their wires crossed, Pedro Vite not quite in the right positioning, and Vanni Sartini said it very well earlier today, where, against, if this wasn't the playoffs, against maybe a Colorado Rapids or a team at the bottom of the West standings, you allow that kind of chance and maybe it doesn't get punished. But when Denny Buonga has the ball at his feet on the edge of the box and you allow him that kind of space, that kind of opportunity, you're going to get punished. And so I think that was in a way, as much as the set pieces were a focus of a lot of the ire of Whitecap supporters, those half chances, those small moments were just indicative, I think, of where it kind of came apart for the Whitecaps, not in terms of a fundamental breakdown in their performance, but just, around the margins, where we've talked about this before, especially when the Whitecaps were struggling early in the year. You need to be bulletproof in those road performances, right? It's very difficult to win on the road in the regular season, let alone playoffs, if you don't really, pitch a really good 90-minute performance. And I think we saw that, especially to me, it was like the 50th to 60-minute mark. LAFC kind of surged forward. They built on their momentum from the first half, and the Whitecaps didn't have a clear response. They were a bit late to react with either substitutions or tactical changes. And all of a sudden you blink and what was a 2-2 match turns into 4-2. And now on the road, I mean, you've conceded four. It's always a huge uphill battle from there. But I don't know. I think I was encouraged, broadly speaking, by the first half for the Whitecaps, where they did go toe-to-toe with LAFC. It was 2-2. It was very clear that their approach going in was kind of that they weren't going to win 1-0. They weren't trying to, pull a 1-0 special on the road. They were trying to see if they could outscore LAFC, if they could, expose them if they made mistakes. And I think it was, given the playoff format, not a bad idea, not a bad approach. Now it's really, what the series turns on is Vancouver's ability to dictate proceedings at home, to, I think, score the first goal, take control early on, because they're a much better front running team than they are playing from behind. So you got to take those lessons as much as you can, especially in terms of like defensive organization and avoiding those errors at the back, and to carry as much of that as you can to Sunday. But weirdly, I think as much as possible from a 5-2 loss, I'm reasonably encouraged by the Whitecaps' fighting chances come this upcoming Sunday, which is makes this format even weirder, because normally, three goals in the difference in the negative category would be devastating, but it's not. It's it's a clean slate come Sunday.
Yeah, it's such a strange one though, I think, overall. Because, even you referenced the performance. Like, yeah, it wasn't a bad performance by Vancouver, say. Like, overall, across the 90 minutes, you're not struggling. Like, oh, man, they got their teeth kicked in. I mean, certainly, again, it was, like, credit to LAFC. It was a solid showing. I mean, it was relatively evenly contested. The XG, funnily enough, 1.3 to 0.5, according to FB Ref. Like, it's competitive in the numbers. Okay, maybe the Whitecaps got a bit of fortune on both of their goals. Well, not both, at least the first goal, Brian White's goal. And the other one was a beautifully executed set piece. What's really was frustrating for me, though, was just, the moments that really, because as the Whitecaps know this, their performances have been great all season. Like, that's the reason why they have good numbers. That's the reason why we've been so complimentary. But also, as we've said, when it comes to the playoffs, it comes down to the moments, comes down to the little things. And that felt like they just lost control of their moments. That's the big thing that surprised, because it feels like they'd wanted to shut that down. And I think the Bouanga first goal is an example of that. Like, such a little breakdown. Like, nothing really to write home about. Vite probably should have dropped back. Or Jermaine Brown also definitely should have stayed back. He had no reason lunging in, but also maybe if Vite drops back, he doesn't. Larea doesn't track. Such a small mistake, like you mentioned. But again, it's the playoff. You have to be so rigid, so, 100% dialed in, so locked in. I mean, that's playoff soccer. Again, I'm thinking to like Forge versus Cavalry. Again, it's completely different leagues, different game. Watching that game, and it was incredible to see how locked in both teams were defensively, how drilled. And perhaps this is also like the nature of MLS's format, where the Whitecaps maybe got a little too comfortable, because whatever, if we allow a goal, it's not the end of the world. But I don't know, I just found that fascinating, because it's playoffs. Like, you should be locked in on those details. And man, there's just so many breakdowns like that on all really five of the goals, like from little errors that just added up. And man, it's frustrating, because again, at the end of the day, it's not surprising. What have we said about this team all year long? Great attack. I think they proved that once again. Two goals on the road against LAFC. Brian White scores. Ryan Gold gets an assist. Like, this shows the level of the team. Like, White and Gold both didn't play that great. We can dive into it. Like, White and Gold, I think White completed 65% of his passes. He was struggling to make anything stick. Hardly got any clear-cut chances. He got a goal. You'll take that. You take that on the road as a striker. Ryan Gold completed 63.9% of his passes. He had one out of three take-ons. He couldn't get involved in the game. So the fact he still got an assist, it's really on the road. In a game where you scored two goals, it comes down to your defending. And the fact they allowed four set-piece goals, but that's like we mentioned in the season. That's why they're underperforming their XG by six on set pieces. That's why they've struggled on set pieces. That's why they struggle on wide balls. And I mean, it's just kind of ironic that it all came to a head in this game, but it's frustrating, because it should be avoidable.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned some individual performances, so let's kind of go there. I mean, I have on the notes here who looked good, who struggled. So I think we can talk about some themes of the match, kind of going through players. And since you mentioned White and Gold, I guess I'll start there as guys who struggled, at least relative to their potential, right? Because as you mentioned, Brian White scores a goal, Ryan Gold with a beautiful assist from a set play. So, these guys still found ways to get involved. But I think crucially, especially at home, finding a way to continue to unlock that White to Gold, Gold to White connection is going to be really important. And we saw at the back end of the regular season, and now in this first playoff matchup, that teams are doing everything they can with physical center backs to deny Brian White those hold up opportunities, not letting him get comfortable with his back to goal, combining with Gold, spreading it out to the wing, and then turning and running in space and stretching teams defensively. Those moments we've seen this season where White gets the ball and hold up, dishes it to Gold. He makes a run. Gold's running in space. They play back and forth. Now a fullback gets involved, and all of a sudden the other team is stretched. They're confused, and next thing you know, it's in the back of the net. Usually a header or a deft touch from Brian White, and next thing you know, your team's down early on in the match. That's kind of the way it's been for the Whitecaps when they've been having success, and teams have been doing a better job. When you put enough of that play on film, on tape, teams start to game plan for it. They start to respond to it. And I thought LAFC did a really good job shutting down that connection. You mentioned the stats in terms of Gold's passing, Brian White in terms of aerial duels, that kind of stuff. Vanni Sartini needs to get in the lab, so to speak, and find a way to be a little bit creative and continue to find opportunities to put LAFC under stress. Because as much as, you know, you can point out the Whitecaps' defensive frailties, and I mean that's absolutely valid, and we definitely should, but the more the Whitecaps put LAFC under pressure, the less they have to worry about defending at their own end of the pitch. I mean, Vanny made a really good point earlier today where, you know, if you don't want to concede four goals from set pieces, you need to not concede 12 corners. You need to not concede a bunch of dangerous free kick chances. You know, obviously I think from that volume of set pieces, you'd still be hoping to have a better defensive record. Don't get me wrong, but they both go hand in hand. And I think in a way, it's not just about defending better. It's also about putting LAFC under stress where they can't overwhelm you at times and make you take fouls and make you concede corners. So that ultimately falls on Brian White and Ryan Gauld, right? Like, they have to be Vancouver's best players. If Vancouver is going to go far in the playoffs, if Vancouver is going to get past LA. And so it's not as though they were poor against LAFC, but as you said, it wasn't their best match. And I think that just that combination from open play is going to be absolutely crucial come Sunday.
Oh, 100%. You know, you need them to be at their best. But also, I guess I'd add as a counterpoint, also the Whitecaps have to set themselves up to support them more. Because I think one thing that was interesting is Richie Larea absolutely cooked the game prior. We talked about it, right? This game, he was quiet. But I think that's also a credit to LAFC, the tactical adjustment from them, putting on Diego Palacios on that side. He was phenomenal. I was really impressed with the performance he put on at left back. Because, of course, in Vancouver, LAFC ended up, I mean, that's the setup they put, but I think they basically put more like defensive responsibility on Palacios this time around. It was like, okay, like, you know, not as much pushing forward and not as much marauding. Take care of Larea on Hollingshead's side. It was take care of Adekugbe. And I think they did a great job of that. So that took away some of the width Vancouver likes also to get. Because, you know, part of their success is, okay, when it's not hitting White and Gauld in transition, you try to get the balls wide. But then another area we honed in on heading into this game was the midfield battle, right? We spoke at length of, okay, the LAFC is very good on the ball in midfield, but Timothy Tillman, he can drift forward a bit. He can leave a lot of space. Did it with Mateus Bogish, leaving kind of Ilya Sanchez on pockets. And the Whitecaps just didn't take advantage of that often enough. Like, look at the goal they scored.
I was going to say, just my thought was that now that you mentioned Ilya Sanchez, man, he looked so comfortable in that match. He was never under any pressure. You know, I feel like that's a key, right? If you're able to put a guy like Ilya under duress, you know you're doing something right. And that was just sort of a marker for me of the fact that they were losing that midfield battle at times.
Yeah, and you look at the White goal. It came off of a turnover in midfield. Kuba jumps up, catches them a bit, and they were able to just kind of play through that half space. They didn't offer enough in that middle area to threaten. I think that's where someone like an Ali Ahmed was really missed, and I think that's something where you want to see him in game two, just because that sort of direct threat. Because while Schopf and Vite give you a bit more ball retention, a bit more stability, they didn't offer that, you know, against an LAFC team that's so good in midfield. You have to be able to pin them back or capitalize when they're pushed high up the field. And the reality is the Whitecaps also didn't hit LAFC enough in those areas in midfield. So I think that's going to be a big area to watch in game two. Because if Palacios and Hollingshead said they'll match up well against Larea and Adekugbe, that's no shame. I know Larea and Adekugbe are among the best wingbacks in MLS. I think that'd be fair to say, even though they haven't been around for long, at least not Adekugbe recently, I'd say on pedigree, but also Palacios is and Hollingshead is a pretty darn good duo. But it feels like for the Whitecaps, that midfield battle is an area where they could, really go more iron v iron versus it feels like they were so worried about neutralizing LAFC's threat. It's where like, Bogus and Tillman weren't even causing that much problem anyways. Like, I don't know. We'll see. We'll, maybe I'll eat my words on this one, but again, I feel like the LAFC midfield, there's just so much more threat before when there was a Cifuentes there. Like there were some of those other options, and Tillman and Bogish just didn't really provide that. So if you're the Whitecaps, I'd like to see them go a bit more in that area of the pitch. So I don't know. I thought that was something that kind of stood out, which I felt perhaps contributed to the Golden White problem. Because another thing I saw is White, there's a few times where, yeah, maybe he lost a header, but he did well to force LAFC to head it back into a second ball area. And instead of having a Whitecap there, like I'm sure like if Ali Ahmed was on the pitch, he's so good at winning those second balls. There's just no one there. And I feel like that was another route that allowed LAFC to retain possession. I think if in that case, Phenomen was there and then White and Gold were able to spring free on that moment, that could have perhaps created some of those chances they just didn't get in this game.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that's a really good point. I mean, you know, in terms of the who struggled category, that would be another place we could talk about, right? Is that clearly the Vitae shot combination wasn't really having the desired effect. I mean, it felt like the first half, for the most part, both teams kind of skipped that central midfield area. Like Tillman and Bogus weren't very involved. Vitae and Schopp weren't very involved. It was a lot of playing out of the back and then sort of getting into wide areas or trying to get the ball to their dangerous forwards for both sides. And then we were kind of chatting before the show, and I mentioned this in my writing that, you know, in those cases where you're almost skipping the midfield at times, then you want your number eights to be box arriving and to be shooting threats. And, you know, Vitae does have that in the locker, but he can be pass first at times. Alessandro Schopp's not really shown the ability to be that box arriving guy. So it didn't seem like a great fit. And then ultimately in the second half, you know, it felt like the Whitecaps needed to make some changes early, and they didn't really jump on that at the right time. And as you mentioned, I think Ali Ahmed, we were saying it, he was a must start heading into this match. And I think we would copy and paste that very same thing for this Sunday. And I can't imagine that Ali would be left on the bench again, but obviously we'll have to see. Yeah, I mean, Alex, any additional thoughts on that? I mean, we can also, I guess, talk about, you know, if we're doing the who struggled category, there's also some defensive players I guess we could talk about, although we've already detailed some of those struggles.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, Ali Ahmed should continue. Like, he should be a locked-in starter, but we haven't seen it. So hopefully this game it changes, just because, again, that dynamic in midfield, he's just missed when he's not on the pitch. And by the time he came on, it kind of felt like it was already too late, right? Like, too little you can do with that situation. Otherwise, yeah, I guess for the who struggled scenario, I mean, it's going to be fascinating to see who starts in that back three now, because we certainly praised Jermaine Brown for his stability over the last few games, and rightfully so. He'd been solid, but it was quite of a sloppy game at right center back from Jermaine Brown. And you know, again, his mistakes weren't that egregious, but against a team like LAFC, they're ones that you can't make, especially that at right center back, you're seeing a pretty steady dose of Denny Bouanga, one of the leading scorers in the league. He is someone that will punish you. Again, that goal he scored, the first goal, phenomenal, right? Like just the technique, the way he stepped in, there's maybe 5-10 players in the league who couldn't even pull that off. Even then, I'd probably say there's only 3 or 4 players in the league who could pull that off. The way he hit that in stride so effortlessly into the top bins. Like, you know, it was finesse, but it was power, right? That was the scary part. Like, it felt like he was stroking into the top corner like it was a golf club, like a little iron, but then he hit it with the power of a driver. You know, if that makes sense. I know you're more of a golfer than I am. But yeah, I just felt like Jermaine Brown, for the matchup he had, just some sloppy mistakes. I think, again, on the Bouanga goal, he pushed up unnecessarily, and kind of as a center back, you're often taught to, you know, if you're going in for a header, either you have to be able to contest it or force. And especially when you're on the outside of a back three, the way he stepped, it just leaves space. It creates, like, usually the one, if there's a player that's going to lunge, it's usually the one in the middle of a back three or more of a central player, just because then everyone around you can kind of drop and fill in the space that you leave. But when you're the outside center back and you push up that way, it's just that leaves far too much room. to exploit. And then even on the other set piece goal, the Hollings had one. Everyone was in line. Like, it was a second phase of a corner. Yes, usually you have someone on the line on the first phase. As soon as the second phase, you try to get your line back. And then Gervain, for no reason, ran back onto the line so that when the ball, Bouanga accidentally, obviously he didn't mean it, he wanted to shoot the ball, but the ball accidentally scores through to Hollingshead. Had, you know, everyone been on the same line, Hollingshead would have been offside, and then Gervain's on the line. And even on the first goal, I think as well, it was his header as well, that he just, he like, it was just little things. Again, it wasn't something where I'm like, it's obviously being very nitpicky and perhaps maybe even a bit unfair to pick him out for a lot of these goals, but there was just a lot of little mistakes. And again, against a team again like LAFC, they punish you for them. That's why they're LAFC.
I think the thing, I won't necessarily add anything on Gervain because I think you covered it very well. But the thing that I start thinking about for this upcoming Sunday is, okay, but I'm not sure at this point that Matias Laborda solves any of those problems. Over-aggressiveness, little errors, miscommunications at the back, that's just kind of been the story of this season. I certainly like Matias Laborda's potential as a player. And I think in your ideal Whitecaps 11 for 2024, you probably hope that Laborda is able to take a step forward, but I don't necessarily see right now that that provides some great improvement. Otherwise, you know, Vanni Sartini would have had Laborda in the lineup to begin with. And then you look at Luis Martins, who comes in the second half. He's not seen a lot of minutes, and he certainly doesn't provide the defensive attributes you're looking for. He's definitely not going to help you on set pieces. He would provide a nice distribution option out of the back, but with Sam Adekubi and Richie Lorea on the pitch, you feel like that value's diminished. So I don't know what Vanni Sartini does Sunday on that back line. I think it's very interesting. I don't necessarily have great answers. Weirdly enough, I think at this point, just going back to the well of Gervain and hoping you can, you know, patch up and improve on some of those little moments from the past weekend might be your best option. I mean, just before we move on, Alex, what do you think about that? If you're sitting in the head coach's office right now, where are you going this Sunday?
It's tough because, I mean, yeah, I guess ideally Laborda would have been starting in the middle of your back three already by now, but he's not. And that's a whole other story. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, I wonder if we see Martins, just because at home, the Whitecaps are going to need to be a bit more on the front foot. It's going to be, you know, I think they're going to have less of a defensive posture than they did. I could see them go Blackman, Ranko, Martins, and just try to play a bit more aggressive and ball possession wise. But yeah, I can't imagine there'll be any huge tweaks. I think Ranko and Blackman will start. I just think based on what we've seen, Vanny has been usually pretty, like, if someone struggles at the back between Brown, Laborda, he's usually pretty quick to switch them. And I think after a game like this, that could spell Martin's music, I think, for a start.
And certainly, I think reading the tea leaves a little bit, my sense is that Laborda is third place to start at the back, that it would be Gervain again or Martins. Just because the way they've been using Luis the last little bit, I do get the sense that, yeah, they'll play around with that idea. I just wonder if they, as much as you want to be ball playing on the front foot, this is LAFC. They're going to have their chances. And so part of me just is concerned about that prospect, but we'll see how it goes. I think it'll be interesting. I feel like it'll go one of those two ways. Okay. Kind of rounding out the who struggled. I mean, whenever five goals are conceded, I think you have to talk about the goalkeeping at least a little bit. And, you know, ultimately I wonder how much, you know, Takoga's performance in its own right had a massive impact on this match, because in particular, I mean, I think about goals 4 and 5, the long shot from outside the box that does or doesn't get a deflection, but certainly shouldn't have gone by Yohei Takaoka. And then the fifth goal, I think anytime a cross is whipped out swinging that goes right through your goal area, you want to get a hand to that. You want to interfere with it in some way. And Takaoka wasn't able to create interventions in those moments. I mean, particularly the fourth goal was an absolute backbreaker for Vancouver, where, yes, they had a moment where they slipped up a little bit, but you know, they're down 3-2, and it feels like if they're able to make adjustments and turn the tide, that they could be back in the match. There might have been a third goal in it, and that fourth goal was just a massive let off. And you know, I mean, I guess the only other one, I wouldn't place any blame really on goals 1 and 3, but you could also look at Bwanga's strike and say, well, it's from distance and it's not, you know, completely tucked into side netting. You'd like your keeper to get a read on that. And I'm thinking of Manuel Veth as well, when saying, you know, hey, if your goalkeeper was 6'4", maybe he's able to get a palm on that. So yeah, I don't want to say it was like a terrible Takaoka performance, because that feels harsh. But again, these fine moments, these fine lines, small margins in these playoff matchups, every little detail counts. And, you know, kind of like I would say about the back line, or say about someone like Richie Larea, the midfield, the Whitecaps are going to need Takaoka to be very strong on Sunday. They're going to need one of his better performances. And that can include conceding shots from outside the box, conceding goals off corners that really should be parried away. So something to watch out for this weekend.
100%. And yeah, I mean, in terms of the goals itself, yeah, it's like little things as well. Because the funny thing is, watching it leading up to the first goal, I mean, I did watch the game on delay, so I had a bit of an advantage of knowing, okay, I think the Whitecaps scored around then. At least, like, I knew the scores. Like, I obviously had seen the score and had an idea. What I found fascinating was on the corner to lead up to the first goal, there's that huge mix-up between who was it? Was Kubas and Takaoka. That feels like one
absolute mess. That was that was not a moment that covered anyone in glory.
That feels like, as a goalkeeper, you'd want to command your box a bit there and just take it. And it was just, it kind of led to confusion. They kind of kicked at each other just because the ball was loose. Takaoka ends up getting hurt, which, I don't know, it just feels like any time that there's an extended delay before a corner and it's for the defensive team, that's just a bad sign, because you're cold, it throws you off rhythm. And then the second goal, nothing Takaoka can do about that. I think that's breakdown happens before it even gets on goal, so that's fine. And then, you know, in terms of the third goal, again, that's one where that was kind of more the defensive line. But yeah, that fourth one where the hand, it didn't even deflect. That's the thing. I personally did not think it didn't deflect. I didn't see any deflections myself. And yeah, it feels like that one was just weird, because I get it. Like, if it was one where his body weight was on the wrong foot, like, even if it didn't deflect and he anticipated his deflection, but like, his body weight was on the left foot, his arm was there. Like, it was strange, because he did everything right. Like, his body positioning, his footwork, everything was fine, and it just went right through his hand. And like you mentioned, that can't happen, especially at a 3-2 game. I think at a 3-2 game, it's a huge ass to ask the Whitecaps to come back a third time, but I think they can do it. We've seen the firepower. At 4-2, it's game over. Like, at that point, as soon as LA gets a 2-goal lead, you're not getting enough back. But a 1-goal lead, it's possible. So that one, yeah, was a huge backbreaker. And ultimately, it's one where, like you mentioned, are all the goals Takaoka's fault? No. Is it even harsh to put him at fault for, like, even the first one? Like, I'm saying, like, it's harsh to say, like, okay, should have, could have, you know, with the corner before. And it was, I mean, the fortune that Hollingshead got to win a header and then have it fall right back to him and score from the angle he did. Like, fair play. It was a great finish from him. He's a Whitecaps killer. Like, man, he loves scoring against the Whitecaps. So if you want to put money on it, I'd maybe for the third game, if it gets that far. But yeah, it was one where Takaoka, maybe you'd want a bit more from your goalkeeper, right? And that's sometimes the difference in the playoffs, that sometimes you get those big saves, the big stops, big interventions, and that goes across the board. That's not just for Takaoka. And really, it feels like, other than that, those two Whitecaps goals, the Whitecaps just didn't have enough of those moments on either side of the ball.
Yeah, I think that kind of punctuates the struggles really well, and something to watch out for this weekend. Okay, in terms of who looked good, I mean, when you lose 5-2, certainly the list tends to be a little bit smaller. But for me, I guess two guys that stood out is an Andres Kubas return to form, return from injury, absolute defensive monster in the first half. So many robust challenges, interventions, you know, interceptions, tackles, obviously a tremendous ball into Brian White that led to Vancouver's opening goal. I mean, shout out to Brian White as well for a very, you know, a poacher's special of a run to just create that space for himself, create that opportunity. But it was just so nice to see Kubas back at his like destroy and progress best. So I think that that's super encouraging for the Whitecaps, because really the back end of the season through injury, just a bit of inconsistency in form. I mean, Kubas is still a very good player, even when he's on 7 out of 10, but that looked like a 9 or 10 out of 10 type Kubas this past weekend. So I think that's massively encouraging. And then the other guy I wanted to give a shout out to is Sam Adekube. I mean, opens his version 2 of his Whitecaps goal scoring account. And I thought like performed really, really well defensively in transition moments, like was not a liability at all at the back, and kind of kept organization when some of his teammates around him were maybe losing that structure at times, and finding a way to get himself involved offensively. So I think that's encouraging. Again, kind of like Kubas, a guy that through injury, through inconsistency, had been in and out of form the back end of the year. Those two really, really stood out for me. So curious for your thoughts on those two, Alex. And then maybe if there's anyone else you sort of saw from that match and thought you want to see more of the same this upcoming weekend.
Yeah, for sure. I thought Kubas was Kubas. Like, man, he looked fantastic. I think FB ref had him at 7 tackles, and like by the eye test, he was everywhere, just mopping it up. Good. I think you're going to need that, especially. I think the Whitecaps might want to go like Ahmed Vite maybe in this second game. Like, okay, maybe like you mentioned, they go Javane instead of Martins. I think you still need to go aggressive in the midfield. I think that's something where they really got to put Tillman and Bogush under pressure and until proven otherwise. So yeah, Kubas was Kubas. Yeah, and for Adekube, it's fun fact, that actually was his first Whitecap goal. Like, it wasn't like he never scored in the first go around, nor for the second team or for the first team. In fact,
did he not score at all for the second team? Wow, that's I just sort of assumed that surely he'd at least scored for the club at some point at like the senior level, but I guess not.
No, I'm looking through right now. That was his second professional goal. He scored one. This one's really fun, actually. I want to see if I can see
professional club goal.
Yes, of course. He scored, of course, for Canada. I mean, heck of a goal for Canada, I could say. Yeah,
hard to forget that one.
I was in person, in Hamilton for that one. Kind of random. I'll throw it to you, because why not? Let's have some, who doesn't love some trivia before we get back to the rest of the top performers. For which of his I'm not going to say which game or whatever. For which of his clubs did he score his other professional goal? So his first professional goal, who was it with? Because of course he's had a few stints around.
Galatasaray.
No, he had a good assist for Galatasaray, but no goals.
Well, was it from Norway? Sweden,
no.
Or Norway?
Funnily enough, no.
Oh my goodness. I have no idea then.
It's with Brighton Hove Albion.
Oh my goodness. That's a blast.
When he went on loan to them, the then championship sign, he went there before, of course, they got promoted and have become the, you know, just talent factory that they are. But hey, they had their eyes on a young Sam Adekube at the time. So certainly they showed potential. It was in the EFL Cup, so Carabao Cup, second round tie in 2016 against Oxford United.
That is an exotic record to have. Like not even in a league match for Brighton, but second round of the Carabao Cup.
But hey, so shout out to Sam Adekube, because man, he's always been
Did they win that match?
Oh, they did. They moved on to the next round. They lost in the third round that year. Funnily enough, Adekube didn't play in the third round, so maybe Brighton should have, or maybe he was injured, but maybe Brighton should have found a way to get him on the field. But yeah, just shout out to Adekube, because he's been so solid offensively his whole club career, always so good at getting forward, such a good crosser of the ball. But honestly, if I'm the Whitecaps, like, look at using him at set pieces. Like, the thing is, like, oh, a left back scoring a header, I'm not surprised. Like, he has something ridiculous where he wins like 65 or 70% of his aerials as a fullback. He's very good in the air. So maybe there's something where you can run some pick plays, and Adekugbe, just, he's such a good like leaper. That's a big thing you could tell. Like, he jumps so well. Like, I genuinely wonder if he played basketball in his youth, because the way he like times his leaps and gets up, genuinely, I'd love to see what he could do as a center back as he gets older. If maybe the, because he still obviously got the speed. I think there was one run he made in this LAFC game where he reminded you know, that he still has some pretty good wheels. But man, in the air, maybe there's some untapped potential there that he's not just a setup man, but that he can be the guy to leap and head home. So shout out to Adekugbe for that. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, in terms of top Whitecaps performers,
that was kind of it, unfortunately.
I would say that was pretty much it. I mean, good to see Levante Johnson get a run at the end. I thought he showed relatively lively on that right flank, so I thought that was good.
Picked up a yellow card right away, which was interesting.
Hey, he was in the fight, and yeah, Ali Ahmed, Junior Oilet. Honestly, most of the subs are fine. It just feels like they kind of came on a bit too late, really, and that was not their fault. And I think even for Benny, it wasn't something like his subs were egregious either. It was just by the time he was even able to turn to the bench around 60, they were already down 3-2, 4-2, right? So that's probably not to their detriment either.
All right. Well, I mean, that kind of, I don't know, Alex, if you have any pressing final talking points, but we can kind of transition forward looking ahead to this weekend. We've already mentioned, I think, a lot of the subtle changes, the little tweaks, also the difference that playing at home will provide, maybe an opportunity to you know, be a little more on the front foot, or at least have, as Vanny talked about earlier today, you know, those moments where maybe your tactics, your strategy wavers a little bit, having that crowd behind you to push you forward, to keep going in those crucial moments, I think could be vital. And we mentioned kind of off the top already, this is as of Wednesday recording, more than 24,000 tickets sold. The Upper Bowl is open for the first time in the Whitecaps' MLS history. So that is a very, very interesting. So, you know, hey, could be pushing 28, 30K by the time all is said and done, if people really get out and support. It is a Sunday 4:30 start, which allows those families, those people that live in the Valley, people that live on Vancouver Island, maybe in the Okanagan, whatever, there's a little more flexibility to find a way to get to the match. So I think that's fantastic. Not just the already sold tickets, the anticipated attendance, but more importantly, the ability to reach out and have a little bit more accessibility to those supporters that maybe don't get to go to the matches as often. I think that's, We've obviously stressed it on the show this season, how we'd like to see more variety. And it seems like the Whitecaps, with this start time, which they did get to choose, by the way, there was sort of a list of slots that the MLS schedule makers put out to teams, and teams had the opportunity to give their input for what slots they would like. And I think Vancouver sought this out because they'd heard from season ticket holders, hey, we've been struggling with the 7:30 starts all season. We'd really like an opportunity to bring the family out to come travel and make it an all day event. And so now people are going to get that opportunity in a massive moment. So I think it's fantastic. Good on the club, good on supporters for buying tickets and heading out to the match. And hopefully it's a fantastic atmosphere on Sunday that the Whitecaps will need it. And could be a memorable afternoon by the time all is said and done, if things go according to plan.
Yeah, and also circumstantially, timing worked well in their favor, because the BC Lions have a game on Saturday, a playoff game. So by the way, like, could be a pretty memorable weekend at BC Place. Two playoff games, Upper Bowl. Like, man, this feels, it's throwback. So it's the old days, like back when the Lions used to regularly do that, back when the pre-MLS era Whitecaps you'd do that, of course. I'm talking like the 90s, 80s, 70s Whitecaps, or I guess more the 70s and 80s, because of course it was the 86ers in the 90s, but I digress. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see. I think the number right now is around 24,000. That's pretty impressive, because usually the Whitecaps crowds, as we've learned, there's a lot of last minute traffic. So the fact they're already at that number is impressive. It's also a high like walk up number. Like there's the last few times they've pushed mid 20K, you hear they sell like 1, 2, 3K on the day of, or like within the few hours before the game. So yeah, it'd be interesting if they can push 30, because that'll be a huge crowd advantage. And we'll hopefully show why the Whitecaps need to push and get more home playoff games. And of course, hopefully they win too as well, so they can get that memory for fans. And hey, who knows? Dallas is trailing 2-0, but if the Whitecaps win and Dallas beats Seattle, it comes back. Both teams pull off comeback. The Whitecaps would host that game. Of course, we're looking a bit far ahead. Yeah, this is a good audition on many fronts, and I like the Sunday afternoon slot. I think it'll be good for the fans. It'll be good for just to have something different. That's been the nice thing about the playoffs so far. Yes, this new format, it's just not been, you know, I haven't been the biggest fan of it now that I've seen it in action, and the main reason is just this first round of games really doesn't matter, and we've seen why, but... One nice thing about playoffs is it was nice to have a Monday night Seattle game. It was nice to have some Sunday games. It's nice that there's a midweek Atlanta-Columbus game. And I think having a Whitecaps host a Sunday afternoon playoff game is another big plus.
Yeah, absolutely. Very much looking forward to that. In terms of the matchup itself, I mean, do we want to dive into... I think it would be fun maybe to do a projected lineup for this one to see what we're thinking in terms of any tactical tweaks. So I guess I'll open us up and run through it, and then we can dive into predictions as well after we've talked a little bit about our lineup. So here's what I'm thinking. We've already maybe talked about some potential differences, but Yohei Takaoka between the sticks, I don't think there's any great debate there. We'll say there's an interesting little back and forth between our friend Michael McCall and Vanni Sartini about the idea of penalty kicks, and would you entertain an Isaac Bomer if that situation were to arise. That's always funny to think about, but I think even when it comes to penalties, Takaoka is the man for this team, and they're going to stick with him. No matter what, even if they fancy Isaac Bomer from the penalty spot. So then at the back, as I mentioned, I think it's bold, and Vanny's made changes oftentimes this season in the back line, but I'm going to say they run it back with Ranko Veselinovic in the center, Matias Laborda and Javane Brown flanking him. Then obviously at wing back, I don't think there's going to be a massive change. Sam Adekubi was still doing some maintenance stuff this week physically, but it sounds like he'll be 100% good to go this weekend. So Richie Larea, Sam Adekubi. Now here's where I'm going to go a little bit off the board. I don't know how much they're working on this at training. This is one where I wish I was across the pond and able to see it. But I'm going to say... maybe they go back to Seattle spec midfield and they go Seb Berhalter and Andres Kubas together. Allowing the likes of Richie and Sam to get a little bit more involved without fear of leaving their defensive cover at all times. We've seen Seb Berhalter's ability to be tactically flexible, to play in wide positions, to defend in wide positions. I just think they need a mix up in that midfield area, and perhaps Seb Berhalter can provide it. And then in front of them, or however it ends up working out in the midfield, but the third of the midfield three, I'm going with Ali Ahmed. I think that much is clear that Ali needs to get involved, covering ground, taking on players 1v1, just being a menace, especially for the likes of Tillman, Bogush, and Illy, who, you know, I think if the Whitecaps are able to put them under pressure, that could really swing the match in their favor. And then, Brian White, Ryan Gauld, same old, and seeing what they can create. The Whitecaps need to, these two teams have seen each other so many times at this point. I feel like the Whitecaps just need something a little surprising, something a little outside the box to just put LA on the back foot right off the bat. Maybe that slightly different midfield composition is what they're able to do to unlock something. So curious for your thoughts, Alex, in terms of project starting 11.
Yeah, the double pivot one's very interesting, and I wouldn't be opposed to seeing that. I think we'll see is I think we see Takaoka. I just think we see Martins rankle Blackman. I think we go a bit that lefty control, maybe a bit more that front foot passing. And then I think we see Adekugbe, Larea, Kubas, Vite, Ahmed, White, Gold. So slight tweaks, but I don't know. I just think it feels like they're going to have to throw a bit of something different just because this is the third time they've seen LA in a row. They're at home. It's a must win. Well, I think they maybe go a bit more, you know, guns a-blazing, maybe surprise them because the last two, they've been more defensive, a bit more, you know. So we'll see. I know it's risky, but...
I was thinking the exact same thing as you. And then hearing from Vanny earlier today, he was sort of saying, hey, we went front foot, take risks down in LA. We know we're going to have to be a little bit more structured at home. And I thought that was an interesting comment because it's not exactly what I would have thought. So again, how much of that is Vanny playing mind games, trying to tactic and position himself? But I wonder what that means in terms of what we see this upcoming weekend. So yeah, I'm curious if maybe it's just an elaborate smoke screen and they really are going to try to play ball possession on the front foot, but maybe we see a more disciplined, just picking those vital moments to be aggressive and not necessarily just aggression throughout the full 90 minutes. I think it we'll have to see how they play it. It'll be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. It'll probably be I bet some balance, because I think that's probably ultimately the easy way to answer against LAFC. Don't go full guns out, but also you at a certain point you're going to need to push, especially early, to get a lead, so you have something to build off of. So yeah, I like the idea of the Berhalter Kubas pivot, perhaps to kind of allude a bit more to what Vanny said, that defensive posture and kind of picking your moments. But man, it's really tough to tell because the Whitecaps, for the most part at home as well, have been a bit more on the front foot, a bit more attacking. And really this recent LAFC game was one of the exceptions, but also LAFC is a kind of team that you probably do make that exception for. So yeah, it'll probably be something a bit more defensive, but I wonder to what extent, right? Like for example, like, do we see something like Schopf, Berhalter, Kubas, and the Whitecaps just go like full out, like, you know, hit in transition or something like that? Like, honestly, I have no idea, right? It's you could tell me anything and I'd probably believe it.
Yeah, this is interesting. It's one where these teams, just because they've seen each other so much and it's three matches in a row, where someone's going to throw like a real wild card into the mix. I think it could happen with LAFC too, right? Where they're already in a good position. They're going out in the road with a chance to close it out, move on to the next round. LAFC, they're thinking MLS Cup repeat. They don't want to be playing three matches against Vancouver. They want to finish this thing up. So I think they could go with something bold and a bit surprising as well, right? Like you never quite know what you're going to get. They've got a lot of good players and some tactical flexibility as well. So yeah, should be an interesting one. In terms of prediction, I was certainly decently optimistic about the Whitecaps' chances in LA. It didn't really pan out for me, but I think I'm gonna double down on that positivity. But I'm gonna say I'm committing to this strategy of the defensive showing where the Whitecaps just capitalize on one or two chances. So as much as I said, oh well, it would be difficult for the Whitecaps to go and win 1-0 on the road in LA, I'm gonna say they win 1-0 at home against LA, which I think would be a really impressive result if they're able to pull it off, holding LAFC scoreless, a mighty challenge. But I think if they're able to throw some tactical wrinkles at LAFC, they're able to button up some of those things from the first match. It wasn't as bad of a showing, I think, as the final scoreline led on. So yeah, Vancouver lives to fight another day. But then they have to go to LAFC and try to do it all over again.
Yeah, it's tough because I think for predictions, Vancouver clean sheet, just I don't think I can in good conscience put it out there, because I think LA in their five previous meetings this year, that they're now up to, boy, 14 goals in 5 games against Vancouver.
Something's got to give at some point, Alex. There's got to be a regression to the mean.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is with LAFC, there's no such thing as regression to the mean. Have you seen their roster? Have you seen their expected goal difference? But no, I think I'll go 1-1. The Whitecaps, bit of a classic big game Whitecaps, KG, they trade goals. It goes to penalties. Ultimately, I think given the edge LAFC has in penalties, I will predict LAFC overtakes it, but we'll see what happens. It's something where really I think the big thing is going to be defensively. Can the Whitecaps can they keep LAFC off the board? Because it feels like they have at least one in them, but can they keep LAFC to zero or one, and then maybe they'll help the Whitecaps get more than one. Maybe they get two or three and they can win like a 3-1 or 3-0, but we'll have to be proven wrong on the defensive side of things.
Certainly is, yeah, as much as my prediction is perhaps unnecessarily bold, I think your point's a good one, where if the Whitecaps are able to limit LAFC to one goal, they have to be decently satisfied with that defensive performance. Then it's just up to, okay, we've been one of the better chance creating teams in MLS all season. We need two goals at home. So I think that that's a, you know, if you just kind of look at it from that perspective, that's an interesting possibility. And, you know, ultimately maybe the Whitecaps' best chances of winning this match are to, you know, keep LAFC relatively in check other than one or two moments, and then, you know, find a way to keep their offense ticking. But man, it's going to be interesting. I can't wait for just some real atmosphere and environment in BC Place, you know, a true playoff feel. I think that's going to be fantastic. So I hope everyone's, you know, going to enjoy that, going to go out and support, or at least take it in an enjoyable way. Certainly we'll be doing the same. So, yeah, I mean, Alex, without further ado, I think we'll move on to some CPL chat. Speaking of atmospheres, speaking of environment, speaking of, just crazy happenings in extra time, you were there in person, made the trip. So I'll just kick it to you right away. I mean, your thoughts on a memorable CPL final, and what I think I'm going to kind of place the crown on, you know, the best season of the Canadian Premier League so far, I think.
Yeah, year five. And this was huge. Third, I guess, full season since the pandemic, second full season, like without a bubble. And the quality was just, it was competitive. There was quality across the league. There was, you know, it was, every team had was you know, competitive. There weren't any huge blowouts for the most part. The playoffs were, like, everything about it was solid. And man, what a way to end! Just, I think first off, the final, it was a best of both worlds. I think the 90 minutes, man, that was cagey. It was defensive. It was a bit boring, but at least for the nerds out there, it was just so well contested. Cavalry's defensive posture, Forge's defense was phenomenal in the 90 minutes. But even then, Cavalry broke through a few times. Tristan Henry saved Forge, and then Ali Moussi. Then in extra time, everything broke apart, and it was everything you want in a final, but you never get. Ali Moussi scores a worldly first touch. Cavalry leads in a final. First time Forge is down in a final. That, of course, other than the Pacific one, but that's first time, or just the second time, sorry, they've trailed in a final. You think, oh, it's over, deep in extra time. No one ever comes back from that, or rarely. But then Forge answers just minutes later with a banger of their own. And you're like, whoa, what's going on? And then, I mean, Tristan Borg just straight from the corner flag. He meant that too. That's the scary thing. He's done it before from that exact same flag, which is just wild that, you know, he has the confidence to go for it for an Olympico. And man, what a way to win it for Forge. I know, you know, some will be frustrated they win 4 in 5 years, but they've been just, they show up in these big games. They're so efficient, ruthless, clinical, pick your objective. And this final is an example of that. Not their greatest performance, but what I really found fascinating was, when they went down a goal, there is zero nerves, like not even a hint of nerves, not even a hint of like mishit passes. You know, sometimes when you're trailing, it gets a little hectic, a little frantic. There was none of that. And in a final, you'd have every reason to be a little nervous, a little chaotic. As soon as they went down 1-0, they just took the ball, went to the center circle. And then Cavalry was almost like a bit overeager, but overexcited. You know, you score, you think it's the winner, you kind of get a bit excited, and Forge just fully took advantage of that. And I mean, that's why they've dominated the playoffs, because they have this efficiency about them that was really remarkable to see show up in that moment once again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you spoke to the calmness when they went down a goal, and to me, I'm immediately thinking of Kyle Becker's face right before he played that short corner that led to the equalizing goal. And it was like, there wasn't any big game moment stress. It was just like, oh, I've seen what I need to see. I know what we need to execute. Boom. Let's go. Let's do it. And just, yeah, absolutely. Forge has been absolutely ruthless as a CPL franchise, and that trend has continued. So super, super impressive from them. Great fight from Cavalry. I mean, I think after a pretty mixed performance in the way they got knocked back, not knocked out because of the CPL format, but sort of knocked back to the semifinal by Forge. They were impressive through the full 90 minutes, and to take the lead against Forge in the final, I thought that, you know, they showed a lot. Ultimately, it just wasn't quite enough against such a gutsy, gritty, grindy Forge team that just finds a way to get it done time after time. Something I will shout out, you know, because I'm the non CPL One Soccer employee on the show, so I can say this from an unbiased perspective. I thought the production quality for the final was really, really good. I know you were there in person, so maybe you didn't see as much, but like some of the player ISO cams, the second, third cameras they had, they made it feel like a special event. And so I want to give kudos for that. I thought that was really a nice touch, and great to see part of the evolution of the league. I mean, you can talk about certain things and coverage here and there, you know, award show in particular, we don't have to get into it too much, but there is certainly some debate about how that was handled. But credit where credit is due. I think that the CPL and One Soccer by extension doing some nice things in terms of production. And then just, I guess, to pick up my point from the very start about like the best Canadian Premier League season so far, I think it was just fantastic that as much as, again, maybe Forge winning, especially for those on the West Coast, is a bit of an eye roll. You had Pacific look like the best team in the CPL for long stretches. You had Cavalry look like the best team in the CPL for long stretches. You had Forge kind of come out of nowhere, but they were always lurking in the shadows. They end up winning a title. You have Halifax, who a lot of people probably expected to be bottom of the table. They were going through a full rebuild. It was a bit of a work in progress. They're able to surge up and make a real push at the end of the season. York United, ownership struggles, felt like the team was in disarray, and you know, they have a small roster, they have players injured, all these different challenges. They're able to make it into the playoff and really take Pacific all the way to the final moments. And then even the teams that didn't make it, I think particularly Ottawa is probably the team I watched the least, so I would have the least intelligible to say about them, but in terms of Valor and Vancouver, still positive signs, encouraging moments. I think, a lot to take away to next season and be encouraged that you could take a step forward. So it felt like every team had some positive stories. And certainly those three teams at the top were all, you know, deserving of title contender status. And I think that's fantastic for the league. And really looking forward for what's to come, because I think, you know, with the improvement of League One BC, the expansion of League One BC, the growth of the Canadian Championship, this Canadian soccer pyramid is just going to continue to get better. And something, I don't know, Alex, I mean, you were there in person, so maybe you can speak to the environment, but to me, something felt a little bit like different about this year's final. It wasn't, it had a magnitude that I don't know if I'd quite experienced before, which I thought was really exciting.
Yeah, it was good just because it was pushing near 14K for Forge. And yeah, it was just loud and they brought good energy. I thought that was good because ultimately building crowds is going to be something good long term. And that was another good area this year where pretty much everyone except York pushed their attendance upwards. Even teams that's especially impressive, like a Valor, say, because they had a quiet year on the pitch, so the fact they're able to increase their average attendance is a good sign, especially if they can be competitive next year. of course, you know, the likes of Halifax, how consistently they're selling out the field out there. Ottawa was a great story, and hopefully they can be more competitive. Well, they were very competitive, just not at the last 6 weeks. So hopefully over the course of all 28 games next year. So yeah, I thought, you know, it was encouraging to see the Forge atmosphere, because I think that's going to pay off long term. It was like, especially that so many of them went and saw Forge win from the hometown perspective. Hopefully, like Bobby Smirnotis talked about it heading in, he's like, yeah, hopefully, because they averaged 6-7K this year and it was great every week. But he's like, hopefully this final means that if they go out and win and people have a good memory, that they can average 8-9K next year. And that's not that you know, impossible. And I think those are all little areas of growth. I'm excited, especially next year with the Champions Cup, the two direct entrants. I think that will also help the quality, just because that's two teams every year in the CPL that are going to prepare to play in that tournament, that are going to be able to bolster their roster to have, you know, help them recruit players. And I think that's going to help the league as well, especially if they can go out and make some noise in those competitions. So yeah, it's a lot to be excited about on that front. And hopefully that just continues to push the league. And, you know, I think this year, the fact that so many teams were able to get in the mix, teams like Ottawa, York, Halifax, joining the likes of Calgary, Pacific, Forge have been more consistent. Hopefully that inspires Valor and Vancouver to push in, and so that we really have a competitive eight-team circuit next year where all eight teams are in, you know, in that playoff push and within a few points of each other, because certainly there's potential for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the attendance note is a good one too, because it's nice to see those things trending in a positive direction, and especially like the, you know, now we're kind of well out of the post-COVID environment. People are starting to sort of, you know, get back into their habitual practices. And so to see the CPL be a growing and a continuing part of people's sports viewership experience, I think is really good. And, you know, I also like, say, for example, close to home for us, a team like Vancouver FC, they're going to continue to make tweaks to the fan experience, tweaks to their environment on match day, that I think so it should hopefully encourage people to continue to come out. So, you know, looking forward to more of that in the future, looking forward to more Salish Sea Derby, especially the way that matchup ended this year, I think was fantastic. As you kind of mentioned off the top, you know, it felt like every matchup in the league, there were some competitive moments. There were some memorable moments this season. And as those rivalries continue to grow and develop their own history, I think it makes every matchup in the league exciting. So yeah, here's to a great fifth season in the Canadian Premier League and an exciting sixth one hopefully upcoming. You know, and then kind of flipping it back to the Whitecaps, we obviously hope that the Vancouver Whitecaps season is not coming to an end this weekend, that they're able to push and extend and take it to a third matchup in LA. So Alex, I mean, final thoughts here before we sign off to kind of round up this week on the third sup.
No, just excited for what's to come. Of course, CPL, like you mentioned, is now off season, so it's the fun part of the year. Transfer rumors, who's coming into the CPL, who's leaving. All I'll say is I've heard certainly the Whitecaps, they've been looking at some CPL talent, and as they should. And I know they're not the only team across Canada. So hopefully we see some good upward movement in that regard. Other than that, shout out to the women's national team. Went to Halifax, sold out Wanderers Ground. Heck of an atmosphere. They won 2-0 over Brazil to make up for a 1-0 loss to Brazil in a sold-out Montreal Stade Saputo. Shout out from a BC perspective, Jordan Hoitema got a great goal. You know, that was good to see. And also Emma Reagan, Burnaby native, 23-year-old, was playing in League One BC last year, becomes the first League One BC alumni to play for the national team. She already played for the national team before, but she ends up playing for the senior national team. There'd been a few League One BC alum that had played for the U17, U20 levels, or even while still in League One BC, actually, they had played at those levels. But this is the first time that an alum, Emma Reagan, has gone pro. She was at varsity at the time, now not somewhat, and went to Denmark and got a call and did well. 60 minutes, against Brazil, not looking out of place in midfield. So shout out Tamer Regan, because I thought that was a pretty fun story. And yeah, obviously this weekend, more connections as the BC MLS team, the Vancouver Whitecaps. Hopefully they can make the most of this big crowd, because I think that'll be a special occasion.
Yeah, absolutely. Great shout out there. Tremendous atmospheres in both Montreal and Halifax. I mean, we're talking about the CPL environments, and obviously Halifax, you know, one and the same there. Great to see them again. I think we, you know, we said this a bunch before on the show, but places like Victoria, Halifax, getting more national team, both men's and women's exposure, or even, you know, youth exposure. Like, it'd be great to see those environments continue to get love, because you see how much passion for soccer there is in those markets. And yeah, just continuing to grow that groundswell of support and understanding and passion for the game across the country is great to see. Looking forward to those last two women's friendlies as well on the West Coast. That's going to be tons of fun, especially with some, as we talked about in the last show, some influential BC natives playing their final matches for the senior national team. And hey, what great symmetry in terms of a couple BC natives riding off into the sunset, and a League One BC player gets a call for the women's national team. Like, that's just so great to see the effect those players have had, the growth of the game, how it's all kind of coming together full circle. I think that's fantastic. So I don't know. Seems like a good place to end to me.
Yeah. Hey, look, there's a BC problem on the national team, but more stories like that's going to fix the BC problem. So bring it on, right? Bring it on. But on that note, you can find me on Twitter at Alex Gonge Ruzic, on Blue Sky at Alex Gonge Ruzic. If you're on Blue Sky, I'm giving it a go. So far, actually, I've been impressed. I need more people on there. It's been empty. Of course, it's still in beta mode, so hopefully the invite codes will start flowing and they can get it off beta. But hey, we're experimenting right now. Twitter is, let's just say, it's not what it used to be, and it hasn't been for a while. And of course, we're on Threads at AGR on the Case, and on Instagram at AGR on the Case.
Yeah, it's always interesting. Twitter's a bit of a moving target, especially, I mean, as much as these new platforms, you know, if one is able to gain real prominence and traction, I'm all for it. But it's just at the moment, it feels like such a mixed bag. Most people are, as much as Twitter's been terrible, they're a bit cautious to leave as well. So for the time being, you can find me, as always, at Samuel_Robot on Twitter. You can find us at thirdsub.ca, pre, post-match content, all that good stuff as per usual. Caleb Wilkins with a couple interesting articles, particularly, you know, the Whitecaps FC 2-1 is a bit timeless. So if you want to catch up on what happened with the second team this season, I'd encourage you to go check that one out, or just bookmark it for a later date when you're looking for some off-season reading. It should stand up to the test of time. And yeah, you can find us, you know, just seek out the Third Sub on whatever your preferred social media platform is. And yeah, thanks so much for listening, everyone. And we'll chat again soon.